Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. Welcome back to the English with Kirsty podcast. And today I have a new guest. Hi, Megan.
Hello.
Hi, it's great to have you here. We met on LinkedIn, where I meet everybody nowadays. And I don't even remember how. I think one of us wrote a post and the other one commented and something like that. But maybe then we discovered that we both teach and both have podcasts. And I thought you'd be a really good guest for the English with Kirsty podcast. So why don't you start by telling the listeners something about you, what you do, why you're interested in languages, and then we'll go on to your podcast.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. So my word nerd personality is in English and Spanish. So I still remember as a kid, my mom was taking some Spanish classes while she was becoming a teacher. And I just kind of glommed on. And all of a sudden, all of these strange words and symbols became this other language to know and understand. So my mother tongue is English. The American English, if you cannot hear already. and really every type of Spanish. So I lived in Spain, worked with Central American immigrants, worked with more of the Castellano Spanish population as well. So any kind of Spanish, I absolutely love it. And now I run Aprovechar Language Solutions, and I teach and consult with companies that want to work better in Spanish and English, and I also do classes. So that can be a Spanish coaching one-on-one or a Spanish group or some English classes as well.
So you work mainly with adults or exclusively with adults?
Exclusively with adults.
<Me too>.
Because it's fun to me to really, I think adults learning language as an adult, it's very easy to say, oh, I'm too busy. And it's a fun challenge because I work a lot with habits and routines of, okay, challenge accepted. You say you're too busy. Do you have 2 minutes a day? Do you have 5 minutes a day? I think we all do. We all have the time. And it's really just prioritizing it and making it so that a language is just a part of who you are and what you do. It doesn't have to be a big, you know, all-encompassing thing.
No, I think it is. You find time for the things that are important for you. And sometimes we say, I'm too busy, when we mean, I don't want to, or this
exactly.
Isn't a priority for me right now. And I guess if you're a language learner and you feel like that, then sometimes it's good to be honest with yourself. I mean, if you need it for your job, you have a problem. But if it's something you're doing in your free time, I know I've let a couple of languages go because it wasn't that I didn't have time for them. I just wasn't prioritizing them because something else had come along that was more interesting or more relevant for me. And I think it's okay. But if you do want to do it, then there's a commitment to yourself to say, I'm going to find the time to do this. But as you say, there are ways to find that 2 minutes, 5 minutes, and they can add up. If you keep doing that, then if you enjoy it as well, you will find another 5 minutes to finish the thing that you started. Or
exactly. That information, the feeling is just an piece of information to me. And ironically, I went through a kind of a big rut with my own Spanish learning. And I was like, oh, it's not fun anymore. Like, I don't want to do it. And it's like, okay, like, let's go back to the drawing board. It's more interesting or intriguing because it's literally what I do, right? But working within yourself versus telling somebody else, giving somebody else advice or recommendations, two separate things. And I was like, okay, like, what can I do to have more fun? So I started watching and doing like little notes on a rock documentary that I watch on the treadmill in Spanish. And so I get the inputs, I make the outputs, and it's more fun to me than sitting here reading the news and going, Everything is terrible. It's the news.
Yeah, you need something that's relevant to you. Do you mean rock music or like rocks or what kind?
Rock music.
Okay.
It was a new Netflix documentary, so Netflix US. I'm not sure if it is anywhere else, but it's called Rompan Todo, and it means break it all. And it goes through the history of rock music in Latin America. So you get all sorts of accents, Argentinian, Chilean, Mexican. I think there's some Peruvian. So you get all sorts of accents in there. And they're talking about music, which is something I love. So, yeah.
Yes, it makes you think about things that you're already interested in the other language, and it kind of excites you again. And I think I see that happen to people at different levels. Sometimes it is like for me, I find the beginning part the hardest. I don't lack motivation, but I lack motivation to communicate with others because I don't have the rich vocabulary that I have in other languages, and I find that really frustrating. But for other people, it comes kind of they've already got a good level. And they don't know how to move on from that. It can happen at different points in your language journey. So once you started listening to the or watching the documentary, did that give you more enthusiasm and motivation again for Spanish?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think we all go through these hills and valleys of learning. And when we're starting, either we're like really excited and all gung ho, or we're starting and we're very scared and we don't know what we don't know, or anything like that. And especially as an adult, it's very important, I think, to have just kind of some plans on how you're going to handle and manage both the hills and the valleys to continue if it's gaining momentum or if it's just simply maintenance. You just want to maintain your current level.
Otherwise, you can end up with very high highs and very low lows, and like in an emotional roller coaster of, I can do this, I can't do this, I can't do anything. Yes, I'm going to do this. You know, it's much better to try and manage that and manage your own expectations as well, but also have something that you can move towards. Like, what's your next thing? Not like in 2 years, I want to be able to do, what do I want to be able to do next month that I can't do now? Or, you know, to break it down a bit so that it feels more manageable.
Yes, absolutely. And neuroscience, we have the dopamine loop. So it's, oh, I did this thing and I didn't think that I could get it. Look at me. And I think when learning a language, we need to have that dopamine loop a little bit more of, okay, the preterite verb tense in Spanish is terrible. But once you learn, let's say three or five verbs, you can watch a scene in a movie, or you can listen to a song and you understand in a way that you didn't understand before. And like that needs to be rewarded.
Celebrate
Sometimes we
yourself.
forget to reward ourselves.
Yeah, that's true. And I think especially if you're an independent learner or if you're learning, with a course, but you're also doing things on your own, sometimes we forget to recognize how far we've come because we're so focused on, oh, I didn't know this word or I didn't know that. But yeah, it's a journey. And as we were saying before we started recording, you never stop learning, even your own language. There's always something new to learn.
Oh, yes, every single day.
So what's the main focus of what you do? So do you work with individuals? Do you work with companies more or?
I want to say I work with everyone. I love everyone. I have certain programs and certain curricula for different groups. So, for companies, for example, I work with probably at this point, a couple every year. And then for groups, I have my Deseo group, which runs twice a year. And that's for learning Spanish 3 months. We build the habits and the routines and the grammar and the fun stuff to really learn Spanish. And then English is kind of pop up as well. So I have kind of some pop up events on my website. So I like to help as many people as I can. So depending on the bandwidth of that month,
That keeps
that's
it
what I
interesting for
will be
you too.
doing. Yeah.
And the podcast, what gave you the idea to start a podcast?
But honestly, people told me you should start a podcast. So I was like, maybe I should. So Una Palabra Sola really came about when I was trying to figure out, it's one thing to have an idea, right? People say, oh, you should start a podcast. And I'm like, okay, like what am I, this white woman, going to be talking about with Spanish? And really, for me, it was focusing on one word. So I teach one word per podcast episode, which is about 30 minutes long. And I go into the etymology, the pronunciation, and then just kind of, this is, I guess, where the coaching comes in, like what that word means, either culturally or what that word means, personally. So, for example, my last word was no. And it's a wonderful word because it's both Spanish and English. It just negates everything. But I went through a large season of no in the winter time frame. So November, December, January, it was a lot of no. And with every no, I think that then creates space for something that you really want, something that you really want to kind of aprovechar, take advantage of, make the most of. So that is Una Palabra Sola.
It's interesting because like a no doesn't always feel good, but sometimes it creates space for the next yes. It's like you have to create that space sometimes before you can find out what you really want, or because if you're so busy running from one thing to another, then you don't have that time to really take stock of your next direction, or the next thing that you're moving towards. And we see it as quite a
Exactly.
negative word, but sometimes no is also positive. Yeah, because it creates space.
Yep. And looking even at some of the synonyms and antonyms in Spanish, it doesn't really have to mean this negative thing. It can, have something, just an entire different nuance or connotation. And that to me is that magic of language.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing with languages is that the more language, I don't mean having 20 languages or something like that, because I personally would prefer to have, well, I've got three additional languages that I'm working on, some my first language, and then German, Romanian, and Portuguese. And I don't want any more because I want to get really, really good at the three that I have and really familiar with them. But every new language you have and you understand on a deeper level means that you can also learn new things about your own language, or see things in a different way. And I think that's one of the things that I find really fascinating about languages, that you just get so much more insight if you can see how things work from a different perspective.
Absolutely. I always say that, language is what you say, the grammar, the pronoun, the verb conjugation. That's what you say, but the underlying culture behind that language is how you say it. And I think you alluded to this, perhaps before we started recording, where you're like, I don't feel like myself in this language. Like, I don't have enough of it yet. And it's very interesting to me because in English, so my first language, talking about emotion or, certain topics, it feels a little bit more constricted than in Spanish, because to me, Spanish is so much more of an emotional language than English. Like, if you're gonna cry, you cry in the street. If you're gonna laugh and sing, you're laughing and singing and gozando and whatever kind of dance enjoyment that you want to get. So it's like all of these emotions are turned up. But then I remember talking to a friend of mine whose Spanish is her first language and English is her second, and she had the opposite. She was like,
That's
I feel
interesting.
like I can communicate my emotions more in English than in Spanish. And I'm like, oh, this is so interesting. Tell me more. So I think it really just depends on our perspective and how we view language and tone and nuance and mood in some of our word choices.
Yeah, I guess the people with whom we're speaking and how how they express themselves. I don't mean with which words, but how much of their emotions are hidden. Like, in the UK, we're not known for being super open about how we feel. And then I'm, meeting lots of people from different places who culturally are more used to doing that. And I think sometimes that plays a bit of a role. If you're used to being in a situation where people will speak about their emotions, then you can feel more encouraged to do that as well. Or is it more to do with, which words you have available to you? I think there are probably a number of factors that play a role there.
Yes, absolutely. I remember, in the US we love to say, "How are you?" And we don't care how you are.
Having a terrible
It's
day.
just
Oh, that's great.
it's just like a conversation opener of like, "Hey, how are you? Good? Yeah, you good?" And it doesn't matter if the dog puked in your shoes or if you your roof has a leak in it or anything like that. It's just that cadence, that dance that we do. But I remember in college I was meeting with a counselor and she was like, "How are you?" And I just started crying because I was so stressed. And those three words, usually everybody's closed off. Yeah, you good? Yeah, you good? Okay, cool. Let's continue on our small talk dance. But if you have that person that has that, I guess, tone or the time or the personality, it can completely change and make a different conversation.
You know that they mean it. Sometimes that's enough. Like, somebody isn't just saying it because it's a transaction. It's like, no, I really want to know how are you? I care enough to take the time to ask the question.
Yeah, absolutely.
So where do you get the ideas for your words? Like, you have a word per episode. Where do you get the ideas for what you're going to have in the next episode?
They kind of come to me. So I collect words here and there, and then I have a Trello board and I just put them on there. I knew that I wanted to start the year off with no, because I think everyone is either so pro New Year's resolution or anti New Year's resolution that I wanted to just have a line in the sand and say, no, here are all the opportunities that you have with it. Others, they come from clients, they come from classes, things that I find myself either thinking about or explaining. For example, respirar is my next word, and it means to breathe. And I had that in there for the language piece, right? Breathing, it literally gives us life. It's our one job. But it's also, how we, I guess, present ourselves in that language. You need to take a breath in order to say what you want to say what you need to say. And sometimes when you're responding, it's easy to take a breath, take a pause, and, do whatever verb conjugation in your head that you need to do before moving forward. So these words right now, they just kind of come because there are so many words in the world. But yeah, it depends on the season, depends on nature, depends on classes, depends on people, I think, and depends on what connects to me personally.
Yeah, and it sounds as though you have a very kind of connected approach in terms of teaching, because you're talking about, building habits. You're talking about taking the time to breathe, because if you're really nervous, for example, about speaking another language or answering, then it's normal to feel a bit tense and a bit stressed. But if you just take, okay, I'm gonna breathe and then think about my answer, and then I'm gonna start, it puts you in a different frame of mind. So it's also about how we can use our languages, and it doesn't sound like it's just, oh, this is a verb table and this is an adjective and this is where we put them in the sentence. It sounds like you really help your clients to build the other language into their experience and into their life.
Yep, And that's why, for the first few years that Aprovechar was in the world, I called myself a language coach, because it was like I just pictured myself and Gandalf with the robe and everything of like, okay, this is where we're gonna go. I might lead you there, but it's up to you to get there. And it is that kind of holistic approach versus teacher. It's just more of like, okay, here are the learning objectives, and here are, here are the class objectives, and now it's kind of the inside of that Venn diagram where I'm kind of combining both and say, this needs to be holistic, this needs to be realistic. More importantly, I think anything that we do, it needs to be fun. And usually fun is surrounding yourself with other people, because people need people when learning that language. And then you can have fun with it. You can riff off of somebody else.
You can learn from somebody else even if you're not intentionally learning. Like if you're talking to them, or if they tell you something about their language, or it's a lot less lonely when you build a network of people around you who may not know each other, but they are part of your language learning experience. And
Yes,
I think that's an interesting
absolutely.
point about the word, because I'm still not entirely happy. I mean, I say language trainer because I don't want to say teacher. But I also don't want to say coach, because I think in some ways it makes a lot of sense, but I find it's a word that's very overused at the moment, and everybody's a coach of something, irrespective of what that really means. So I'm a little bit I'm less likely to use the word coach, because I feel a lot of people are using it sometimes in a way that isn't massively helpful. And
Yes.
then I've seen mentor as well. I really like that. A friend of mine uses that language, mentor, because you're actually, helping people on their journey, but you're not like, it's not in the same way as calling yourself a teacher. But I'm still looking for my word. Maybe I'll find it, but
Quite honestly, I think I am too. I have the same hesitation with coach as you do. I think it's very massively overused and overproduced. With teacher, it's interesting because Spanish, there are two types of teachers. You have like a maestra, which is like kind of a lower level teacher, and then you have a profe or profesora, and that's like your professor kind of teacher. And so it's always interesting to me when I teach, for example, an English class and working with native Spanish speakers, and I'm like, what are they gonna call me? So it's if anything, I might just outsource that title, because coach doesn't translate into Spanish really at all. So you have, I think the closest is, if you don't go the teacher route, is a mentor. You have like a mentora.
Which sounds more approachable and less like I'm in the classroom and I'm going to teach you, but also it kind of also gives this idea that you have a role to play too as the learner. I'm not going to do it for you. I can't do it for you. It's your journey. I'm just going to mentor you on this journey. I can teach you things. I can help you with things, but ultimately you have to want it as well, and you have to do the work to get there.
Absolutely. It's interesting because I've been planning my garden, and this does tie together, I promise. But within my garden, it's like I can plant the seeds. I can't control what comes up. What comes up might not be what I planted, quite honestly. I'm not a great gardener. This is my first one. And with language, a lot of that is very similar, where we can plant the seeds. We can teach people about verbs, or we can teach them about, this is how you can fold language into your day, but we can't really control the seeds.
Whether they grow, whether they get watered, whether they
Whether they get root rot, hopefully not. That's been my experience so far. So many indoor plants with root rot. But
I can keep animals alive but not plants. I have a couple of succulents, and even they aren't looking so good at the moment. So.
somehow keeping animals alive is a lot easier than plants.
They tell you when they're hungry or they want to go out, or
Yes, it's all about the communication. Plants, I think, have a much more subtle communication.
I'm not tuned into the plant frequency because I don't hear when they're crying bald. But yeah, I need to be better. But yeah, I think it's an interesting analogy because yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. You maybe, yeah, you can do your best, but it's a partnership, and I think that's important to remember. So what kind of you were talking about habits. Are there any other habits that you, like an example of a habit that you would suggest to people who want to build learning another language into their life?
I think it really depends on the goal that you have, right? You have to start with an end in mind, with that goal in mind, and whether that goal is building or starting from scratch or maintaining. It kind of changes your habit, but for me, I do a lot of kind of, I call them inputs and outputs. So what am I taking in, versus what am I producing out? And a lot of people, they'll take things in and listen to Spanish podcasts or music or watching a Netflix documentary on rock, the history of rock music. But then they don't really produce outwards. And so that can be writing a grocery list. It can be speaking out loud to an animal or a plant or a plastic plant. Or it can be, you know, even things like thinking or joining a conversation club or finding someone to practice with or ordering coffee. Like, basically, the point is your habits can be as big or as small is what you're comfortable with and or what your goals are. Because if you have like a very big, strident goal, your habit is going to also feel very uncomfortable. And so it's just more of creating those things, whether that's habit stacking and, hey, I'm gonna watch, you know, a YouTube show on the news while my coffee is brewing in the morning. Or that could also be habit replacement. Instead of subscribing to this, I don't know, newsletter in English, I'm going to subscribe to this one in Spanish. So it can be very simple and very small and probably a little bit more realistic. Or it can be some of the bigger goals that people have of, I have this trip planned to Mexico in 2025 and I want to be fluent. And it's like, what does fluent mean? How are you going to get there? And how are you going to set the smaller goals to get there?
And how are you going to start now rather than waiting till January 2025 when you don't have much time left?
Absolutely. When in doubt, start today. Start 2 minutes today. And then when that feels good and comfortable and easy, make it 5 minutes, make it 10, make it 30, and really build on from there. I think we put so much emphasis on SMART goals or, you know, goal setting in general that we forget like it needs to be scalable. It needs to be realistic. We aren't going to, you know, stop working, go on sabbatical, leave our families and all of our responsibility and just commit to this one thing. I mean, some people might, but usually people
Usually,
won't.
as an adult, you can't because you have responsibilities, pets, families, jobs, and that shouldn't be the right order, should it? But anyway.
Yeah, life goes on, like with all of your responsibilities, for sure.
It needs to be fun at some part. I mean, you can't just focus on the fun things or you never do the things that you're not very good at or not very confident with. But at some point, you know, some of these goals need to be fun, otherwise you'll lose motivation completely. But at the same time, to pay a bit of attention to the thing that you find hardest or the thing that you feel least comfortable with. Otherwise, you'll never get that skill up to the same level as the others. Excuse
And
me,
then
it's
it
always been
just,
speaking.
yeah, like that's always the frustration, right? That's where the frustration comes in, where I took the DELE exam quite a few times, and this is a diploma of Español como lengua extranjera from Instituto Cervantes, so it was a big deal, and I had a set of tutors that they were helping me with my listening and writing skills because the exam was three parts. And the speaking exam, I passed both times. The listening and the writing exam, I did not pass. And it's like, in one sense, it was like, okay, this is great. Now I know where I am. Now I know what I need to work on. But in the other sense, it was like, oh, I really need that accountability. Because otherwise, it's easy to speak, it's easy to understand. Listening without captions is, I'm still struggling with it. Same with writing like a college level essay in Spanish. I hadn't done that since college. So I think it's just knowing like your skills, they're always going to be able to be developed and improved. And language was never like a trophy to win or a goal to reach or a checkbox to check. Like it's always evolving.
Yeah, as are you. I think you can learn a lot about yourself as well when you're learning languages, and you can understand yourself better. And okay, that may make it easier to continue learning, but it can also give you other benefits in other areas of your life if you understand yourself or other areas that you need to work on that maybe have nothing to do with language, but you can get to know yourself really well when you're on this journey of discovery with languages.
Absolutely. And it's like, even just thinking back to that time when I was so enmeshed in Spanish learning, I would choose different English words depending on the specific context that I was like getting or going for. So even today, sometimes I'll use the wrong preposition in English because I'm translating from Spanish or vice versa. So it's this constant journey, and it has a ton of self-discovery.
And which is what makes it fun in a way. And that's what I always often say on the podcast here, that language learning should be fun. Sure, there'll be difficult parts, but if it's not fun, we're not going to keep doing it. So we need to find some way to make it fun.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to include all your links on the show notes page. Including the podcast, but I thought just quickly it would be good to know who is the podcast for. So what level do they need to be? Is it all in Spanish?
It is in Spanglish,
Okay.
my podcast. You don't really need to know any Spanish to listen to it, but it is for those that are wanting to learn Spanish one word at a time. And then because it is mostly in Spanglish, where I'll go off on a tangent in Spanish and then come back and translate it. And I also have the transcript on my website as well. So my website is kind of the hub for any pop-up events, programs, the podcast, transcript, everything.
Okay, so I'll include that in the show notes, and then people can come and find you and have a look at your website as well. Where do you spend most of your time on social media? Do you have one site that you prefer over others, or are you all over the internet?
I am on two sites. I'm on LinkedIn and YouTube. So LinkedIn, I'm at Aprovechar Language Solutions, and then YouTube, I'm at Aprovechar. YouTube, quite honestly, I haven't done so many videos, but that's where I have 2 minute tips, history in 60 seconds, as well as the video part of the podcast. And then LinkedIn is where I have a one letter Wednesday. So basically two Spanish words and there's one letter difference.
Okay.
and I will probably be posting more of those in English as well, because English has tons of one letters. Not even going to go into the differences between UK and US English, but tons of one letters that is just very fun for me to kind of educate the masses on different little words and nuances.
It's a bite-sized way of doing it as well, a word and then the next word, and that's how you get a lot of new words, but you have to start with one and then add to it.
Exactly. It's like a good meal. It needs a good base of rice, and then you can add the beans, and then you can add the plantains and the chicken and all of that. Sorry, I know it's around your lunchtime.
Oh no, it's not. It's It's around 3 o'clock in the afternoon and a good time to be hungry. So thank you for coming on the podcast. It's been good to exchange ideas with you, and I've got some things to think about as well. So I think that's really nice that you can always, learn new things as we talk with people who share our interest and passion for learning languages. And I'll include everything in the show notes page. And yeah, let's catch up again sometime.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.